Hogwarts, 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 teach us something.
Hello, and welcome to Wizard Studies.
Join us as we peruse all things Potter.
Hello, and welcome to Wizard Studies. I'm Audrey.
And I'm Katie.
And today we're going to be talking all about death throughout the series, specifically talking about the importance of certain deaths to the series and Harry specifically, if we can find a particular meaning for him. This is kind of inspired by this really popular Tumblr post that we've seen screenshots of, and it basically goes through some of the major deaths in the series, like James and Lily, Cedric, Sirius, Albus, and then at the end, and it says the meanings of each of those deaths in a short little sentence, and then at the end it says, meaning of this post, to make anyone who reads it want to crawl in a hole and drown in their tears. So, who knows, there may be tears in this episode. And this is going to be part one of a two-part series, so next week we'll release the next episode, and in part one we're going to go through all the deaths from pre-book, so James and Lily, up to Dumbledore is the last one, so the first six books, and that's like not even halfway through all of the deaths in the series, but we figured that was a good breaking point, because then in Deathly Hallows everything really picks up and there's a lot of deaths to talk about. So next week in part two will be death in Deathly Hallows.
Yep. Are we ready?
Here we go.
So, as Audrey mentioned, we're kind of starting pre-book, but we're making the exception. We're not doing all the pre-book deaths that are talked about, because that would be entirely insane. So, we're just talking about James and Lily Potter, because their deaths all obviously have kind of a really big impact on the series as a whole, and Harry as well. So, they died on Halloween in 1981. They died in Godric's Hollow in their house there. Voldemort walks into the house and James is unarmed, which Voldemort we see from flashbacks of him, through Harry's mind, I think, right? He thinks something like, oh, this fool, like, he thinks he trusts his friends way too much. He believes too much in the faith of others that he believed that he put his faith in others and they deserve that trust and that faith. But Voldemort obviously got his way in the house past the protection charm, and so he didn't have his wand there. So he literally just walks in, and James, I think, yells at Lily, like, go upstairs, go to Harry, I got this kind of thing. His bravery and or cockiness, whichever way you would like to think of that. And Voldemort kills him, obviously, because he doesn't have a wand. He has no way to defend himself. And Voldemort feels no sadness. He doesn't give any mercy. So there goes James. Lily, in the meantime, had gone upstairs to be with Harry to try and protect him. And Voldemort, pre this, had promised Snape that he would save Lily, but kill the boy, basically. That Snape only cared about Lily. And I think this is a very important point to remember, because Snape is not a good guy. He literally did not care about the baby. He did not care about Lily's child. He only cared about saving Lily and basically, like, wanted to swoop in and steal her.
Even though if Lily had survived and Harry had died and Lily knew that Snape was, like, semi, like, he was a part of it. He's the reason, he's the one that told Voldemort the prophecy. Like, does he really think Lily would ever have, like, wanted to even speak to him? That's another episode.
Yeah, we have so much to get into about him, but we can't do that too much today. And so Voldemort keeps his promise to Snape and asks Lily to step aside, I think, three times. He gives her three chances, three strikes, and she's out. And Voldemort kills her because Lily refuses to step aside and give him Harry. She dies protecting the love of her life, Harry. And this is what sets off the ancient magic, the magic of love and a mother's love in particular. And obviously that's another big point in Harry Potter, a mother's love. So we might have a separate episode on that entirely, or love in general and the importance of that in the series. And her death is what prevents Harry from dying when Voldemort casts the killing curse. And that's how it gets ricocheted back to him. And basically starts the plot. It gives Harry the scar. That's how Harry survives. That's how Voldemort survives. And we're ready to go. Book one. So, this is pretty significant to the series, as I just said. Like, it basically kicks off everything that happens after it. But it's also very significant to Harry because, I mean, he loses both of his parents in one night, and it also makes him the chosen one. This night is the night that his destiny is written to defeat Voldemort. And this is also the night that Lord Voldemort chooses Harry over Neville. So those things kind of do coincide a little bit. And then this also, like I said, both Harry's parents get killed in this, and so it makes him an orphan. And so it kind of changes the track of his childhood. Instead of growing up in a loving home with two loving parents, he grows up with the Dursleys, basically as an extra mouth to feed. They don't really care about him. They don't love him. And it kind of makes him the person who he is. And it makes him, like, treasure the friendships and treasure the love that he does have later on in life. So this point sets off the plot of the series and makes Harry into the man he will become and the man he needs to be to defeat Voldemort. So obviously these two deaths are huge to the series.
Yeah, and then some personal thoughts on our reactions to this. I mean, obviously we don't really get a reaction to Lily and James's death because it's just a given at the beginning of the series. But I just kind of think Lily and James's deaths are obviously super tragic, but I'm definitely less affected by their deaths than other deaths in the series because we never really get to know Lily and James before they die. We do learn more about them as Harry starts to learn about them through their friends and people that they knew, but I'm not affected so much by their characters dying. Even though I like both of them as characters, I don't think that, like, I'm really upset that they are dead. I think the saddest part of this is obviously just that Harry does get orphaned, but their deaths have a reason and it's really clear. So Harry is Harry Potter because Lily and James die. And I think the times that I get most upset about their deaths is when I remember just how young they were and that they really did not get to live much of a life. I mean, when we think about parents with a one-year-old kid dying, that's tragic. But usually we think, like, oh, maybe they're 30 or at least in their mid-20s. But Lily and James were 21, which is just, that's tragic. And I think the flashback in Deathly Hallows, where you're reading it from Voldemort's point of view, is particularly hard to read just because it's so, like, just horrific.
Yeah, it's very emotionless how he goes through that whole process. And I definitely agree with you. And I talk about this a little bit with Sirius's death. I think this death is sad because of how it affects Harry, not really how it affects me. Like, to make this sad, I have to think of it through Harry's perspective, not my own. Whereas some of the characters, like Dumbledore, I'm sad that he's dead. Like, I'm sad, not right. Harry. I'm sad. For this, I'm sad for Harry that they're dead. We don't really get to meet them. We don't have a personal connection to them that much. But since we have a personal connection to Harry, we kind of feel the death through his eyes and through his feelings. And obviously, it's heartbreaking. Like you said, they're 21. Like, they were literally my age, which is crazy to think about. Number one, that they died. Number two, that they were married at 21. And number three, that they had a kid.
Like, yeah.
I need to whip my life into shape. But it just, Like, I don't really have that much to say about them and their death and how it affects me personally, because it doesn't really. It affects Harry personally, not me.
So the next death that we kind of hear about, we couldn't really place this in a book, is Nicholas and Perronel Flamel. So they die sometime between 1992 and 96, because obviously still alive during the Sorcerer's Stone, but then once the stone is destroyed, it's basically just a matter of time because he's 600-something years old. So J.K. states before the release of Half-Blood Prince that he was dead prior to that book. So that's where we get 96 as being the latest that he could have possibly died. So it's between Harry's first and sixth years that the Flamels die. And just a little fun fact is that Nicholas was over 665 years old when he died, because we know that he turned 665 the year before Sorcerer's Stone.
Yeah, and I think that if you've seen Crimes of Grindelwald, I just recently rewatched it. It's crazy to think that at that point he was, like, what, like, 500-something? It was in the 20s.
It was in the 20s, so he was, like, almost 600.
Yeah, and how frail he was at that point. Yeah. And then he lives, like, almost another 90, 80 years, which is a normal lifespan for normal people, and he's still alive. So, crazy. Crazy.
So then moving on to book one, the first death we actually see in the series is Professor Quirrell, and he dies on June 4th, 1992. So on Pottermore, JK talked a little bit about how Quirrell dies, so I'm just going to read her quote because it pretty much sums it all up. She says, Quirrell is, in effect, turned into a temporary Horcrux by Voldemort. He is greatly depleted by the physical strain of fighting the far stronger evil soul inside him. Quirrell's body manifests burns and blisters during his fight with Harry due to the protective power Harry's mother left in his skin when she died for him. When the body Voldemort and Quirrell are sharing is horribly burned by contact with Harry, the former flees just in time to save himself, leaving the damaged and enfeebled Quirrell to collapse and die. This death, I guess it's the first one that Harry really witnesses, but then he passes out, so he doesn't go through grieving. It's not the same as, it's not going to make him see Thestrals, but this is kind of the first person that we see Voldemort kill on his rise back. He is just using Quirrell's body and to get to Harry, and when Quirrell can't serve him anymore, he's out of there and leaves Quirrell to die.
Yeah, and oh, just a side note before I forget, these are deaths that we found through, like, looking at multiple lists. It's not by any means an exhaustive list. A lot of unnamed people die throughout the series, and some deaths are even up in the air, whether they're dead or not. So, looking at you, Lavender. So, this is, like, we tried to make it as comprehensive as possible and as in chronological order as possible, but we're not perfect. It was a lot of research, so we might have messed some stuff up, but we tried our best. So, moving on. This actually jumps from book one to book four. There are no deaths that I counted as deaths throughout those books. I believe in book three, a lot of the lists of deaths that I found counted Lavender Brown's bunny as a death, which I just didn't feel like was necessary to add into our list in our episode. So we jumped over at least one. I can't remember if there are any other ones. So now we're in book four, Goblet of Fire. Ooh, wearing my Goblet of Fire t-shirt today.
She bought this t-shirt off of Amazon for $30.
I had a $25 gift card, so it only cost me $5. If we haven't already, there'll probably be a picture up on Instagram of me in it. So, but moving on to book four, the first death, we, in chronological order, these are in chronological order, not in the order that we hear of them, to the best of our abilities. So, Bertha Jorkins, she died at some point in 1994, and this was, I believe it has to have been before Frank Bryce and when Voldemort and Pettigrew were in the big house, because they talk about her being dead, because Frank mm-hmm. Bryce is like, they're talking about killing, like, that they killed a woman, and Bertha Jorkins was that woman. So, she had run into Peter Pettigrew in an inn in Albania, and she obviously recognized him. Peter, and again, is Albania really Albania? The world may never know. So she ran into him, and Peter recognizes her because they were both at Hogwarts together, I believe, because Sirius talks about being at Hogwarts with her. So he captures her to protect his identity, and then he brings her to Voldemort, and she ends up being very useful to Voldemort, but he kind of criticizes Peter because Peter uses this as a way to talk about his loyalty, but Voldemort is like, bro, you didn't actually know how helpful she was going to be. You just took her to save your own skin. So they break the memory charm placed on her by Barty Crouch Sr. during interrogations and torture. So they find out information about Barty Crouch Jr. They find out information about the Triwizard Tournament and the Quidditch World Cup, I believe. And this greatly weakened her body and mind. And then they just killed her because they can, and because she was basically useless at this point, I do believe. And they use her, this her death is actually the last one that creates a Horcrux for Voldemort. So this is her death is the one that he uses to turn Nagini into a Horcrux. And then after she goes missing, the Ministry doesn't really care. People are kind of like, "Where's Bertha Jorkins?" And they're like, "Oh, she's just lost. Like she could never get around."
Ludo,
okay. This woman has been missing for months at this point. Sounds like a great tack to take. But so her death is like not really confirmed for readers until she. Well, I guess not really confirmed to the wizarding world until she comes out of Voldemort's wand during the Priority Incantatum connection that he has with Harry at the end of Goblet of Fire. So we see her come out there, and so that's confirming that Voldemort, not only was she dead, but it was Voldemort that killed her. Yes. And then this next death that we're going to talk about is Frank Bryce. I mentioned him earlier. So he died on August 16th, 1994, and they got this date because it was the day before Harry left for the Burrow, and he arrived at the Burrow 2 weeks before the start of school. So this exact date was kind of done through subtraction and figuring stuff out. He was killed by Voldemort using the Avada Kedavra curse because he was the housekeeper for the Riddle House, and he noticed that the lights were on and the fires were on in the house, and so he was like, "Oh, those damn kids in there again." So he decides to go in there and gets killed for it just because he overheard some craziness that he didn't even really understand. But Voldemort kills him, and he's also somebody who comes out of his wand during the Priority Incantatum with Harry. So, and I believe he seemed like a really sweet guy. When he came out, he said something to Harry like, "You got him, boy, like, don't let go," like, is, like, cheering Harry on, so.
The interesting thing about that, too, is I was reading, and I guess it's a point I never, like, put together, but he doesn't realize what happened to him. He doesn't know what happened to him until he comes out in Priority Incantatum, because, like, he didn't know that magic was a thing when he gets killed. So that's just kind of interesting.
And then next we're moving on to Barty Crouch Sr. So he died sometime in May of 1995. And he, at this point, he was under the imperious curse of Voldemort or Barty Crouch Jr. And this was to prevent him from informing Dumbledore of Voldemort's plans, because he kind of, he figures some stuff out from his son, and then he just has too much information, and he starts to fight to break free of the Imperius curse, but is kind of delusional, and he arrives at Hogwarts the night that Harry, Crumb, Fleur, and Cedric are taken down to the maze and being shown what the third task is going to be. And Crumb kind of takes Harry aside to talk to him about Hermione. And then Barty Crouch Sr. comes out of nowhere and is kind of babbling nonsense. Like, he keeps going in between kind of this him looking crazy, but this is him telling the truth, and him pretending that he's talking to Percy and is still working at the Ministry. And so Crumb gets super freaked out, and Harry decides to leave Crumb with Barty Crouch Sr. and run back up to Hogwarts to tell Dumbledore that Barty Crouch Sr. is on the premises and talking crazy. But Crumb gets knocked out, and then Barty Crouch Jr., posing as Moody at this point, kills his dad, transfigures him into a bone, and buries him in the garden at Hagrid's hut. And Crouch Jr. admits to this at the end of Goblet of Fire when he takes Veritaserum and spills everything. So this is, I mean, it's kind of heartbreaking thinking about his son killing his father. I know he might not have been the best father, but that's still kind of with the in-person, like, with the emotionless that he kills his dad and just transfigures him into a bone and buries him.
Especially because Crouch Sr. went through a lot to, like, I know he was the one that mercilessly put Junior in Azkaban in the first place, but he did, like, go along with his wife's plan to free Junior, yeah. So. I don't know. Yeah. It's pretty cutthroat. So, the next death is a big one. Katie's already making a frowny face. Cedric Diggory died on June 24th, 1995, which is, of course, the date of the third task in the Triwizard Tournament. He was killed by Wormtail using Voldemort's wand, so that's key, that's why he comes out of Priory Incantatum. And this happens in the Little Hangleton graveyard when Voldemort orders Wormtail kill the spare. So Cedric is, of course, the spare.
I think this is pretty interesting, just that kind of terminology, the spare, because that's a word that's, like, greatly associated with monarchies. Like, you have the heir and the spare. So that could be, like, kind of, like, harking back to, like, British monarchies and stuff. Because I've never really referred to, or heard anybody refer to somebody as a spare if it wasn't, like, in the case of Harry. Not Harry Potter. Harry the, like, prince.
Oh. Yeah, that is interesting. And, of course, that becomes focus is that word in Cursed Child.
Yeah.
So anyway, Cedric appears as an echo out of Voldemort's wand, and that's when he asks Harry to take his body back to his parents, which is just, oh God.
Take my body back.
I'm going to cry. Okay. Anyway, the end of the year feast is turned into a memorial for Cedric with the black banners instead of any of the house colors. And Dumbledore explains how he died at the hands of Voldemort against the Ministry's wishes, but Dumbledore wants to use this to, like, tell these kids who did not live through the first war that Voldemort is the person that killed Cedric. So I'm going to read a quote from Dumbledore's speech. Voldemort does give a lot of speeches. But,
true.
Okay, so Dumbledore says, "Today we acknowledge a really terrible loss. Cedric Diggory was, as you all know, exceptionally hardworking, infinitely fair-minded, and more importantly, a fierce, fierce friend. Now, I think, therefore, you have the right to know exactly how he died. You see, Cedric Diggory was murdered by Lord Voldemort. The Ministry of Magic does not wish me to tell you this, but not to do so, I think, would be an insult to his memory." That pretty much explains some of the significance of Cedric's death in the series. He's one of the first victims of the Second Wizarding War. He's certainly the first victim I can think of that. Oh, I guess Bertha Jorkins is, and Frank Bryce are innocent, but with, like, Quirrell, he's kind of complicit in Voldemort's rise to power. So, but his death really means a lot to the Wizarding community, specifically the students. It inspires people to fight. And even though the Ministry denies that he died at Voldemort's hand, it still kind of lights this fire in a lot of the people that believe Harry and believe Dumbledore. And he becomes an inspiration to Dumbledore's army as a whole. And I think this inspiration kind of comes from another quote from Dumbledore at the memorial that I'm going to read. So Dumbledore says, "Remember, Cedric, remember if the time should come when you have to make a choice between what is right and what is easy. Remember what happened to a boy who was good and kind and brave because he strayed across the path of Lord Voldemort. Remember Cedric Diggory." And I think Dumbledore knows exactly what he's doing with this speech. He knows that all of these students, because they're at school with Harry Potter and also just because they are part of the Wizarding World, like, they are going to have a role to play in the war to come. Dumbledore always kind of knows what's going to happen, and I believe that, like, he is telling them the truth about this, and he's saying, drawing on all these good values that Cedric represents in order to tell them that, like, the years ahead are not going to be easy, but we need to, like, remember the good and kind and brave people that we're fighting for and that have given their lives to this in the past. So then, of course, Cedric becomes one of the big inspirations for Dumbledore's army. They have his picture on the mirror, and many of the students want to know how he died. Cho even asks Harry at one point if Cedric would have survived if he knew to defend himself, and Harry explains that he did know those skills, but he never got the chance. He didn't even know. He thought that it was another part of the task. He had no idea what was going on. So Harry acknowledges that, like, he's helping them prepare for a war, but I mean, Cedric knew these things and he still died. And I think his death is also the proof for many to believe that Voldemort is back. Although the Ministry doesn't admit it, a lot of people see Cedric as proof that Voldemort is back.
Yeah, I think that's something really interesting about his death for me as a reader, and I'm sure many other readers, is, like, the Ministry and Fudge try to spin this as this tragic accident. Like, what do you mean it was a tragic accident? Like, a 17-year-old boy was killed. Like, he does not provide any reason for this happening. And Voldemort does, and everybody's too blind to see that he was the one telling the truth. Like, it's crazy to me that people have this, like, such innate belief that, like, or part of them, that they don't want to believe that a war is coming. I'm not saying that that's a bad thing or a good thing, but that they're over, that they overlook this, because Fudge doesn't provide a plausible explanation for what happened. Like, a boy just doesn't die from a killing curse, because if Harry brought his body back, they had to have known that he died from a killing curse. There's no other, like, wounds on him that would have, would have proved death in another way. And so it's just crazy to me that Fudge is so, like, easily able to manipulate the wizarding world as a whole.
Yeah, and I also think, like, what Dumbledore said is right. Saying that Cedric died as an accident is a total insult to his memory.
Oh, so true. Like, he wouldn't have just died from anything, you know? No. He was a very competent, very brave, very nice boy.
So, then just talking about the significance of Cedric's death to Harry, because I think this is really a major one. He's extremely affected by Cedric's death, and of course, fighting Voldemort himself made Harry realize the seriousness of the situation. Like, at the same time, right after Cedric dies, Harry does go face-to-face and duel with Voldemort and see all the Death Eaters come back. So he's, of course, aware that this is very serious. But the fact that Cedric dies makes it all the more traumatizing and real, because Harry had previously faced kind of versions of Voldemort twice in Sorcerer's Stone and Chamber of Secrets. It's not, like, a full, like, corporeal Voldemort. But no one died during these encounters except for Quirrell, but that's not a big deal to Harry. So I think Harry doesn't realize the weight of what that actually means. Of course, he doesn't remember the first war. He knows that his parents died because of Voldemort, but that's not totally real. I mean, if something happens when you're 1.5, you don't, it's just kind of a given to you. It's not something you've experienced. Mm-hmm. So Harry keeps the Support Cedric Diggory badge in his honor, which is just, because that badge was so, like, I mean, Harry was so affected by it, with people not even, like, caring, like, it said Potter stinks. Like, Harry was so affected by it throughout the tournament, but the fact that he keeps it is just really meaningful, I think.
Yeah.
We learn in Order of the Phoenix that he has nightmares of the night in the graveyard, in which he calls out Cedric's name.
Who's Cedric? Your boyfriend.
Your boyfriend. And because of Cedric's death, Harry can see Thestrals at the beginning of Order of the Phoenix. And he previously couldn't see them because he was in the room when his mother died and he saw her die, but he was not old enough to comprehend and fully go through the grieving process. And then with Quirrell, he didn't really grieve, and he also passed out before Quirrell died. So, I mean, just right there, that's, like, a tangible effect of the impact that Cedric's death has on Harry. And then, of course, Cursed Child is basically revolving around Harry blaming himself for Cedric's death, which I'm not even going to go into right now. Cursed Child is, like, a whole series of episodes, but that's the basic plot point is that, like, Amos Diggory wouldn't, I don't think, have the same anger at Harry and blame Harry if Harry didn't let him blame him. You know, Harry lets Amos blame him.
Yeah, for sure.
And then finally, on the effect on Harry, I found this Quora thread that just kind of lists the things that Harry learned from Cedric's death. So the first one is that life is precious and can be gone in an instant. Anyone can die for any reason. So Cedric was completely innocent, and he died only because him and Harry agreed to take the cup together. They were being fair. So he died just basically because he's a decent person, or because Harry's a decent person, and they just agreed to tie. And then it also taught Harry that associating with him can and will get you killed. And this is a really important theme. I mean, it follows Harry all the way through up to the Battle of Hogwarts, when Voldemort uses it to draw Harry into the forest by saying how many people have to die. And it contributes to Harry's whole savior complex. And, I mean, Harry is constantly afraid of who he's endangering. Like, Ron and Hermione are always in dangerous situations with Harry, and Harry does try to leave them behind constantly, but he knows that Ron and Hermione chose those. And Cedric did not choose to fight Voldemort or face Voldemort. Like, he just thought he was going to win the Triwizard Tournament. He didn't even get a chance to make the choice. I think he would have chose to fight, but he didn't even get the chance, which is, I think, makes Harry feel like he should take even more of the blame. And also, it's just what makes it so tragic, which kind of goes into my personal thoughts on it, is that Cedric's death is probably the most tragic one in the series for me. Like, I like Cedric as a character, but he's not my favorite. He's not my favorite who dies, but I think this is the most tragic death because he was so good and so innocent and had so much potential at such a young age, and he didn't even get the choice to choose to fight against Voldemort. And just every time I read it / watch the part where his parents learn of his death is, like, I just sob.
Yeah.
Like, full on. That's my boy! Like, I can't do it.
That part in the movie is just so heartbreaking. Because you, like, you can tell, and obviously you kind of mentioned this, but you can see it in Kershaw as well, like, Cedric Diggory is Amos's life. Like,
yeah.
He's the reason that he gets up in the morning. He's the reason he does everything that he does. Yeah. And whether you like him or not, that's, he has a strong love for his son. And I think it's pretty admirable. Mm-hmm. But I'd say my personal thoughts is this death is kind of the first one in the series that not only matters to Harry, but, like, matters to the reader. When we don't have a huge connection to Cedric, we don't see him too much. But what we do see of him is him being, like, just a nice kid, like a just, very fair, very good, like, kid. And to see him die kind of with in this very, like, tragic and merciless manner is just heartbreaking for the reader and for Harry.
Yeah, and I guess after the next death episode, we're gonna have an episode on Cedric. And I started, like, so we'll get into his character, but I started doing some notes on that, and I just, it's making me go back and be like, really appreciate him even more. So
look out for that episode. Yeah, I'm so excited. I think that I also think that he just, like, kind of gets some flack for what he does in the fourth book, kind of in his way of helping Harry. People are like, oh, well, thanks, Cedric. Like, Harry told you exactly what to do and you just told him to take a bath. I don't know. I think that he always just wants to do what's right. And I think that's tragic, that somebody that just always wants to help people and do what's right and kind of be the good guy in the situation gets him killed. Also, I have to throw in my puff pride at him. I am beyond proud to have Cedric Diggory in my house. I don't care what Kershaw says. I don't care what that tells me. Cedric Diggory will always be, like, one of the best Hufflepuffs and one of the best characters. And I could not think of a better ambassador for Hufflepuff House besides maybe me.
Oh, jeez. A Hufflepuff would not say that.
No, I am definitely not better than Cedric Diggory. I feel like kind of alluding to what Dumbledore talks about in his memorializing speech, like, I feel like the world could benefit from just stopping and thinking and being like, what would Cedric Diggory do in this situation? Mm-hmm. Like,
remember Cedric Diggory.
Yeah. So, moving on to Barty Crouch Jr. So, he, in a sense, died on June 24th, 1995. That is the day that he received the Dementor's kiss. But as we know, that doesn't really kill you. It's a fate worse than death. So, that's the day that his soul is sucked out of his body, and then his body just died at some point after that. I don't know how long a body can live without a soul, but anyways. So at some point after June 24th is when his body died. And he received the Dementor's kiss because Cornelius Fudge ordered the Dementor's kiss on him, believing that Barty Crouch Jr. was just acting on his own actions. He was still blind to seeing that Voldemort was still around, so he just thought that Barty Crouch Jr. was solely responsible for this. He didn't even want to interrogate him. He didn't want to know anything. So before Barty Crouch Jr. was able to tell his truth to anybody besides Dumbledore, Harry, Snape, and McGonagall, I think, were the ones that were there, Cornelius Fudge kills him. So, in a sense, is still acting to keep the wizarding world in the dark about Voldemort, which is such an annoying moment in the series. Like, if he could have just, everything would have been different. But, anyways, so, because of this, like I said, he never gets to tell his truth, and the world never gets to know the real story of what happened, I guess, until later on when it's actually very clear that Voldemort is back, like, in a year when he's actually at the Ministry. So, The next death is Broderick Bode, so we're moving into book five at this point, and he died at some point in early January of 1996, so he was an unspeakable at the Department of Mysteries at the Ministry, so Malfoy uses his pull, Lucius Malfoy uses his pull in the Ministry to get inside and Imperius Broderick Bode to go into the Department of Mysteries because that's he has access to it and steal the prophecy for Lucius. But when he did, he triggered defensive spells and he was not able to retrieve the prophecy as Lucius wanted him to. And the result of these spells that were cast on him or whatever happened, the booby traps. That's why I said same booby traps. If you can name that reference, if and your name is not Rebecca Dixon, you might get it. I have no idea what you're talking about. It's my favorite movie of all time. So the booby traps caused him to be sent to St. Mungo's where he was hospitalized. And I think, like, he was just kind of loopy, if I remember correctly. Like, I don't think they were actually physical injuries that they talked about him having when they run when the trio and Ginny run into him at St. Mungo's. So while he's in St. Mungo's, they watch him get a Christmas present, the trio and Ginny, when I refer to they, and it's a plant. And the nurses are like, oh, good, like it'll give you something to do. You can help take care of the plant, like it'll help you recover. And it turns out that this plant was actually Devil's Snare, and it was sent anonymously by the Death Eaters as somebody, some faceless, nameless Death Eater. And the Devil's Snare actually strangles and kills him in bed at St. Mungo's. And I believe they read about his death in the papers, or they read about his him being a traitor in the papers. They read about his kind of trying to break into the Department of Ministries in the Daily Prophet, the trio does, while at Hogwarts.
So I've got another big one. Sirius Black died on June 18th, 1996. This is, of course, the date of the Battle of the Department of Mysteries. Why is that so hard to say?
Because you want to say Mysteries.
Okay. So, anyway, he was killed by his cousin, Miss Bellatrix Lestrange. Bellatrix hits him with a stunning spell. And in the movie, I'm pretty sure it's a green light. So, I think in the movie, they're portraying it as a killing curse. But anyway, I believe it is a stunning spell, and he falls backwards through the veil. So it's not the actual spell that kills him, but once you fall through the veil, you cross into the world of the dead, and you can't come back. So the veil is kind of this mysterious object. It's located in the middle of the death chamber, and Pottermore has a little bit of a write-up on it because they talk about all the different things you see in the Department of Mysteries. So it says, what is the veil? It's one of the Harry Potter series' greatest questions. Could it be a gateway between the living and the dead? The entrance to the afterlife? And what happened to Black once he passed through it? Did he die or just make a one-way journey? If it is a gateway, why can't people come out the other side? So basically that answers none of our questions. It just asks like six questions. But it's believed that if you step through the veil, you are forever trapped in the world of the dead. And the wiki talks a little bit about how some people can hear voices from behind the veil, and they're supposed to be like the voices of people's past loved ones talking to them from the other side. So you would presume that Harry's parents and maybe Cedric are the voices he can hear, and then Luna could probably hear her mother. So it kind of lines up with the like being able to see Thestrals thing. The ability to hear these voices, it seems like it's the degree to which they can be heard is related to belief in the afterlife, which I don't really know where this source comes from. It's on the wiki. I couldn't figure out where they got that information, but that's pretty interesting to me. I don't know. Just a fun fact.
Yeah, I know that JK does have quite a few like religious religious symbols throughout this series. The afterlife is never really discussed in the sense that we kind of discuss it in the non-magical sense, like with a god in heaven. Right. But they do talk about the afterlife, and so that's really interesting. I'd be interested to, like, hear where that came from, because Harry never really talks about his own belief in the afterlife, and if he could hear them to any degree, that would be surprising to me, because I feel like he always just has this very, like, hatred of death. You know, like he's not able to accept it. Yeah, and a fear of death. I mean, obviously that changes throughout the books, but it's very interesting. And obviously, like, you're going to talk about this later, but this death makes him the angriest probably he's ever been.
Yeah. So, significance in the series. Sirius's death is really important just because Harry once again loses his guardian and the closest adult he has in his life. It's kind of like being orphaned all over again, because Sirius was the closest thing he had to a parent. Sirius and Harry's bond is more of like a parental figure bond type thing than Harry had with James or Lily, just because he was so young then.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't remember that. So Sirius really, I think, had the ability to shape him more than James and Lily did, because Harry, it was a very formative time in his life. And of course, Sirius's death is all the more significant because it is the culmination of the battle that Voldemort drew Harry to by planting a false memory in his head. So Harry charged off to do what he thought was save Sirius and ends up
killing him,
resulting in Sirius's death. Yeah. So as we move through the next couple books, this connection, the mind connection, becomes even more important, right? It's how Voldemort can kind of track how they're doing with the Horcruxes and find out that they're hunting Horcruxes. And I mean, it's a big focal point in the fifth book with the Occlumency lessons. And then post-mortem, Sirius is cleared of all charges by the Ministry, because they see Voldemort back and Dumbledore's able to be like, okay, listen up, this is actually what's happening. And I think it's just really a tragic death when you think about how he was only 36 when he died, and he had spent over a decade of that time in Azkaban. And then after his escape, the 2 years that he had out, or 2 or 3 years that he had out, he did get to form a relationship with Harry, but he was also imprisoned in a way because he had to stay hidden during his time on the run, which, I mean, you saw the effects on him. He is not that type of person. So then his significance to Harry, or the death's significance to Harry, is that just as with Cedric, Harry blames himself for Sirius's death, which then makes the grieving all the more painful. I mean, it's enough to just lose one of the most important people in your life and then to blame yourself for that. It's just, I can't even imagine. So Harry, again, has this how many people have to die for me feeling. But he also tries to kind of blame Snape and Dumbledore for it and directs his anger at them. And I think that's his way of coping, even though it's not very successful. After Sirius's death, Harry isolates himself because he fears that Voldemort can use the people he is close to in order to target him. Immediately after, Harry tries to use the Cruciatus Curse on Bellatrix, and he's unsuccessful because he's not, like, evil, he doesn't actually mean it, but, I mean, the fact that he's willing to go to that length is kind of extreme.
It's interesting comparing this situation to the time where he is successful using the Cruciatus Curse, after one of the Karos. I can never remember which one's the female and which one's the male. Their names are both pretty...
Electo and...
Amicus, but Amicus. I don't know which one they match up to, because both of the, I think Alesso's the female, but anyways, one of them, I think it's Amicus, spits in McGonagall's face, and that's when he's able to use a Cruciatus Curse. And obviously that has more to do with, than like his feeling. He was a more skilled wizard, he had used unforgivable curses at that point, but it's interesting comparing those two, that the anger that he feels at that point could be somewhat comparable to the anger he feels after Sirius's death.
Right. So also, Harry does inherit 12 Grimmauld Place and Creature as a result of Sirius's death, which then becomes important in Deathly Hallows because Creature's role in the story of Regulus and the Horcrux.
Sorry, I know I just had something to say, but Creature is very interesting to me because throughout the filming of Order of the Phoenix, JK was very clear to have Creature included because the filmmakers originally did not think he was necessary. And I guess at this point, book 7 had not come out yet. And so she told them, it was like, no, like Creature must be included. He's going to be a bigger role. But then like even in book 7, he plays a little bit of a role, but it's him and Dobby. And it's also not the kind of role that he, like the Regulus is not mentioned at all. In the books, or in the movie, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, they say R.A.B.
Yeah, or that's true, but, like, he doesn't refer to Regulus, I don't think. He just doesn't play the same role he does in the movies and the books. In the books, he's obviously more important. Right. And so, that always kind of annoyed me. I'm like, you like, you added him in 5 because you knew he was going to be a big character. And then you just, like, brought him back almost as a courtesy in book 7. Like, you didn't give him the same role. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. I think that's kind of off from movie 7, but.
Also, they split it up. Like, you could have definitely fit more things in, but it's fine.
So, like I was saying, Harry is re-orphaned in a way. He gets used to communicating with Sirius regularly over his 4th and 5th year. And he mentions in Half-Blood Prince that he no longer receives letters from anyone. And he still has Lupin as a sort of father figure. And of course he has the Weasleys, but that's not the same. Sirius was kind of like all his, and he was always closest with Sirius. And I think it's interesting to think about if Harry would have accepted Sirius's help in the hunt for Horcruxes. Like, he lashes out at Lupin. We've talked about this before. And I just wonder if Sirius was still alive, would he have, like, allowed Sirius to tag along? I think he wouldn't have done anything without Dumbledore's go-ahead. But
yeah.
Maybe something we can talk about. Finally, I mean, this is not Harry, but Daniel Radcliffe said that this was the hardest death in the series for him. I mean, part of the reason is that he loved working with Gary Oldman.
That's so cute.
He says, at this time, I didn't know if I'd be working with Gary Oldman again, and that was very sad, and I adored Gary, and working with him was an incredibly formative experience in my life. Aww. So it's kind of like they're taking on the characters' roles. It's really cute. But also he said that he thought that Sirius's death just really comes out of the blue and was a real shocker, and that's why it's the one that he found the hardest to deal with.
Yeah, I think that scene in the movie is fairly well done. Like, his death happened so fast, so it's hard for, like, us to, like, mourn Sirius in that point in the movie because he dies and then Harry leaves and then is fighting Voldemort. Like, it happens so fast, we're not given that much time to, like, think about it. And, I mean, it's the same thing that basically happens in the book. It's very fast, and not until Harry gets back to Hogwarts and he starts to, like, kind of question what is death, basically, is when we can mourn that, so... It's very interesting death in terms of, like, cinematically how they portrayed it. But I think it was, they made it as sad as they could, I think, in how fast it was.
It's also that the speediness of it is kind of part of the tragic part of it, because Harry doesn't see it coming, and then he doesn't even have Sirius's body to be like, okay, this happened.
Yeah. Also, in the movie, he refers to Harry as James, which it doesn't happen in the books. And I don't know how I feel about it, because I think it like, simultaneously makes my, like, love for Sirius swell, but also, like, highlights everything that's wrong about him.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh my gosh, he, like, really cares about his friends. Like, he really cares about Harry, but also, like, one of his biggest flaws is he sees Harry as James. Like, he's not able to get over their deaths. And obviously, he's had his own traumatic and tragic circumstances. So, we'll get into that in a serious episode. A serious episode that was serious. But when it comes to, like, my personal thoughts about this death, like I said, it happens very fast, so it's hard to actually, like, think about it and process it. But I mentioned this Sirius's death earlier in reference to Lily and James's death. So, I mean, Sirius is not a character that I love. He's not a character that I hate. I'm, like, pretty indifferent on him. I don't really know why. I think he's a good character, but we just don't really see that much of him. We see more of him in the books than we do in the movies, for sure. But even then, it's mostly through letters and, like, flu powder, and I feel like we don't really get a very good connection with him. It's all, like, through Harry, and obviously the whole books are through Harry, but still, like, we don't see much of Sirius. And kind of what we do see isn't super great. Like, it's not super bad either, but it's not super great. Like I said, extenuating circumstances always play a role in this. So obviously it's harder for us, or harder for me at least, as a reader, reading it through Harry's perspective. Like, I mourn Harry having to mourn Sirius, you know, like that same kind of thing. I don't really mourn Sirius that much. But the way that Harry processes his death and how he kind of moves on and deals with it is what's saddest to me. That part where he's back at Hogwarts and is, like, running around trying to find nearly headless Nick and is like, what if Sirius could come back, and is, like, trying to find the mirror, like, frantically just trying to find ways around Sirius's death, is what makes the death all the more tragic. Especially for, like, readers.
Yeah, I totally agree. I recognize that Sirius has his flaws, and I think the best thing about him as a character is the joy that he brings Harry, and that's what makes his death so hard to swallow. It kills me that he died, especially as the result of Harry charging off to the Ministry to do what he thinks is to save him, because, I mean, you can't blame Harry for Cedric's death. I know Harry blames himself, but you can't. But, like, there is a valid reason to blame Harry in Sirius's death, because, like, I don't know, if he had been succeeding at Occlumency, maybe Voldemort wouldn't have been able to plant this memory. Or, like, if he wasn't so rash, you know?
Yeah.
So it is, it's, I mean, obviously, Harry reacted that way, and that's kind of what makes him Harry, but there is, like, a valid reason to blame him, which I think is the most depressing part of the death for me.
Yeah, that's a hard one. We're moving on to two not-so-hard ones. Emily Vance and Amelia Bones. So, their deaths are pretty connected because we find out about them at the same time. We find out about them when the meeting of the two ministers happens between Fudge and the Muggle Prime Minister, which, side note, is, like, one of my favorite... It's my favorite opening to a book. I love that part so much. And people really don't like it. And I, like, that's one of my favorite chapters in the whole series. I don't know why. I seem to love it a lot. But anyways, so both their deaths occur between the 8th and 14th of July in 1996. And how we get this is because, we learn about their deaths through the meeting of the two ministers. And that meeting happens in mid-July, and they refer to their deaths as being the week before. So at some point around the 8th to the 14th of July 1996 is when they both die. So Emily Vance was a part of the Order of the Phoenix in both of the First and Second Wars, and was the was part of the advance guard that brought Harry to 12 Grimmauld Place in his fifth year. And she was killed in a house near the Muggle Prime Minister, and that's really all we know. She was obviously killed by Death Eaters, or people working for Death Eaters, or people working for Voldemort. And then Amelia Bones was a member of the Wizengamot, and aunt to Susan Bones, who is a Hufflepuff, in Harry's year. And much of the Bones family, they were, like, very active parts in both wars, especially the First War. And so a lot of her family had died throughout the First Wizarding War. And then her death is brought up again when Harry goes back to Hogwarts this year, and they're like, oh, Susan Bones is, like, so sad, or something like that. They talk about how the death has affected Susan. Amelia was disliked by Voldemort and the Death Eaters because she was an unbiased and fair member of the ministry, so basically because she was a good person and wasn't going to let the Death Eaters and such sway her way of running things. Like, they were kind of able to do with Fudge and get him out of the way, and then Scrimgeour kind of came in and was at least a little bit stronger of a figure. Fudge believes and says to the Muggle Prime Minister that he thinks that she was actually killed by Voldemort himself because she was so talented and was such a good fighter. And then he also mentions that there was evidence that would suggest that they had to put in a lot of effort to kill her, and she put up quite a fight. And they also talk about the Muggle police being very confused, by how she died, because she was killed in a room that was locked from the inside. So next is Florian Fortescue. So he died at some point during the summer of 1996, and we learn this, I believe, Bill says something to the trio about it. They said that he was basically just dragged off by the looks of his shop. So Florian is somebody who didn't make it into the films, but was kind of pivotal in the books in some way. So in the books, during the third year, Harry's actually at Diagon Alley at the Leaky Cauldron by himself for a couple weeks before Ron and Hermione get into town. So he spends it just kind of like being a wizarding kid for the first time in his life, like living in the wizarding world like a normal kid would, not just at Hogwarts, like, year-round. And he spends a lot of this time at Florian Fortescue's ice cream shop because he gives him free ice cream. And while they're sitting there, they talk a lot, and Florian tells him a lot about magical history because he's very good at it and very interested in it. And so there's actually a point where he's taking his History of Magic final that he just basically remembers everything that Florian said him. He doesn't remember anything from Professor Binns. It's all just based on what Mr. Fortescue had talked to him about, which I think it's cute. And then, so, like I mentioned earlier, Bill says that he was dragged off by the look of his place, and what's something something that was very interesting to me when I was looking stuff up about him is that originally JK had planned for him to get kidnapped by Lord Voldemort for information pertaining to the diadem and the Elder Wand. Or Voldemort captured him for information on the Elder Wand, and then the trio wanted to find him for information on the diadem, because like I mentioned earlier, he was really good at magical history. So he had at some point picked up information about these two things, because his family is also very, like, well-known in the wizarding world and pretty high up. I think one of his family members was actually a minister of magic or a headmaster at Hogwarts. So he was related to a former headmaster. And so he kind of knew this information, and the trio was she had planned for the trio to save him from Voldemort and get information from the diadem that way. But then she never really was able to fit that into the series, and she thought it would make more sense and be less roundabout if he actually just got the information from the Grey Lady herself about it. So she scrapped that, and JK is like, there's a quote in here that she was actually pretty upset about it, because she believes that his death was her fault, like, because he didn't have to die if she wasn't originally planning on this happening throughout the series. So, but that was very interesting.
All right, so the next death we have is Mrs. Abbott, who dies in the fall of 1996. I don't think we have a first name on her, but she is Hannah Abbott's mother, and we know that she was either a Muggle or Muggle-born, because Abbott is a prominent pureblood family, but Hannah is a half-blood. So there is some Muggle blood on her mom's side. And we just know that Hannah gets pulled out of her biology class to be told that her mother was killed by Death Eaters. We don't know the circumstances or anything, but I think this is kind of just into, like, picking up with book six. Voldemort's fully back. Everyone knows it. And, like, there are going to be people in Harry's world, in Hogwarts, that are being affected. And then in April of 1997, April 20th, so this is still Harry's sixth year in Half-Blood Prince, Aragog dies. And Aragog was probably Hagrid's first pet at Hogwarts. He gets him in his third year. And we know that Tom Riddle used Aragog as a scapegoat to place the blame on Hagrid for the Chamber of Secrets. And in Half-Blood Prince, Hagrid spends a lot of time taking care of him, because Aragog's really old at this point and going to be dying soon. And he sends Harry a letter telling him that Aragog died. And I remember the letter's, like, tear-stained. And he asks him to come down for his funeral. But Harry does not plan on going, because he needs to get the memory from Slughorn. But the Felix Felicis compels Harry to go, where he meets Professor Slughorn and then is able to appeal to his sentimental side and to give him the memory he was after. And this is that scene in Deathly Hallows where Harry does the, like, little pincer thing, and I think it's so funny. Sorry for anybody's ears. All right, so after Aragog, the next death that happens is about 2 months later. It's at the end of the school year, and this is Gibbon. So he dies June 30th, 1997, and Gibbon is one of the Death Eaters that Draco lets into the school through the Vanishing Cabinet in the Battle of the Astronomy Tower, where Dumbledore ends up dying. And so he's the one that casts the Dark Mark above the school, and that's actually what draws Harry and Dumbledore to the Astronomy Tower. And it's just mentioned after the battle that he was killed kind of by friendly fire, so it was Raoul, another Death Eater, shot a killing curse that hit Gibbon instead of one of the good guys. So thanks, Gibbon, for taking that one for the team.
Thank you, Mr. Felix, because I believe that was probably the case from Felix Felicis, because Harry gives it to all of the DA members right. That are left to help them during the fight, and I bet you it was headed towards one of them, and luck just so happened to hit.
The curse took a right turn.
Yeah. So he was kind of one of those no-name Death Eaters, but we actually have a name, that's why he's included. So, obviously, if you could tell from that death, we're moving on to Albus Dumbledore's death. Oh. So he, I'm going to talk about this in my personal thoughts, but, like, to me personally, is, like, one of the saddest, most heartbreaking deaths for me. So, he died June 30th, 1997, and he was killed by the killing curse / falling off the astronomy tower by Severus Snape. So, Draco had originally been the one that was supposed to kill him. He was instructed by Voldemort to get Death Eaters into the school and to kill Dumbledore, or he would harm his family. Because at this point, Lord Voldemort basically had Mr. and Mrs. Malfoy, because this is post Azkaban breakout. So, yes, yeah. Both of them hostage in their own house. But Snape saved Draco from committing the murder because this was the plan all along. Dumbledore knew that Lord Voldemort was planning on Draco having to kill him, and Voldemort made Snape promise that Snape would be the one to kill him. Mm-hmm. And this is twofold. He wanted to save Draco from committing murder because that's an act that obviously affects you very deeply, as we see through the formation of Horcruxes. That's how a piece of your soul gets broken off from the rest of your soul. But he also wanted the Elder One to die without a master, because he figured that if Snape killed him but on Dumbledore's orders, the Elder One would die with Dumbledore. Not yeah. The case.
One thing Dumbledore is wrong about.
Or is it? Shout out to Super Carlin Bros again. They have a great video on the ownage, that's not a word.
Lineage?
The lineage of the Elder One. Yeah, and they talk about how it's possible that none of these people were ever the true master of the Elder Wand. It's very interesting. We'll probably do an episode on the Elder Wand or the Hallows in general. But moving on. So he's killed by Snape, and this infuriates Harry. He's like, you little fucker. Like, you, whatever. He just gets very angry, and that's when he ends up using his own curse on Snape, and Snape is like, how dare you use my own spells against me? But anyways, after Dumbledore's death, first off, we actually get to see a wizard funeral, which is really cool, yeah. I think, because Harry attends
Harry
Dumbledore's...
And Ginny's relationship after that.
Oh
my
gosh.
The death of a relationship. It's a funeral for...
Funeral for two.
For...
Three.
What is their ship name? Gary?
Hinny? No, that's Hinny. I think it's Hinny.
Hinny
Both
part
of those
one.
Are terrible. But...
Okay, anyway, sorry.
Which, again, was a side note in itself, talking about how we finally get to see a funeral. And this is when we meet Alpheus Doge. This is when we meet Alpheus Doge, who kind of becomes semi-important in the seventh book for a little short period of time. But after his death, very quickly, Rita Skeeter has a very quick turnaround in releasing the book, The Life and Lies of Albus Dumbledore, that exposed, in quotation marks, some parts of Dumbledore's life that were not known to the public, which is to say, basically all of his life. Nobody knew anything about Dumbledore. If you didn't know he had a sister, some people didn't even know he had a brother, like...
Come on.
Secrets and lies. Secrets and lies. Vault, what does they say? And Dumbledore, he was a natural. So, obviously, we know kind of from Dumbledore, and hopefully we'll know more throughout the Fantastic Beasts series.
Yes.
That I know, I'm so excited.
Dumbledore.
We see that a lot of these facts, while they might be true in essence, are very skewed and very biased as Rita Skeeter writes them. He might have known Grindelwald, but he was never really working for the same thing that Grindelwald was working for. Like, it's just very all misconstrued, even though it might be, in essence, accurate. The importance of his death to the series is obviously a pretty big one. A lot of people believe that he was the only wizard that could ever really defeat Voldemort. He was the only one that wasn't afraid of him, and he was the only one that Voldemort was afraid of. And the wizard world has talked about that quite a bit. And then this also gave Voldemort and his followers kind of confidence. They were like, oh yes, Dumbledore's gone, and through this, in one swoop, they take over Hogwarts and the Ministry, which I think is basically a direct result of Dumbledore dying, because he was really the head of both of those. Whether it was in paper or in writing or not, like, he had control of the Ministry if he wanted to.
Right.
And this gives Voldemort an opening to kind of swoop in there and take control over both of those things, and basically cements what could have happened with the Voldemort and Valor if Voldemort had won the Wizarding World. The Wizarding War. And then the significance to Harry is also pretty great. But I kind of spun this as his death is kind of what starts a fire under Harry. It, like, gives him, I like the confidence. He basically is like, well, Dumbledore's dead. I need to start doing things. Yeah, it's on me now. I can't hide behind Dumbledore. I can't just take orders from him. I need to, like, do what he told me and do it now. So this is kind of when he decides not to go back to school the next year, when he decides to dedicate his life to stopping Voldemort. He starts to go after the Horcruxes. He leaves the comfort and the safety of the Weasleys and leaves the people that he knows want to protect him. And he puts a lot of his faith in Dumbledore, and I think he did so rightly. People might disagree with me, but I love Dumbledore.
We are pro-Dumbledore in this household.
Yes,
we don't love him in this podcast.
And then Harry will always look up to Dumbledore. I think that even when his faith was shook a little bit from the books, he still was like, he still wanted proof. That's all he wanted. He wanted answers. And he kind of got those answers when they met at King's Cross after his death. And in a weird roundabout way, Dumbledore dying is what, like, gave Harry the confidence and the opportunity to shine and do things on his own and really... He did everything right. Dumbledore was afraid he was going to be Hallows, not Horcruxes, and he kind of strays that way a little bit, but gets back on track. And everything he does is to, like, honor Dumbledore and what he wanted and what Dumbledore wanted. And then something I thought of that interested me a little bit is if Dumbledore was still alive, let's say he survives, I think that J.K. used his death as a plot point basically to, like, make it harder for Harry. Mm-hmm. If Dumbledore were still alive, I think a lot of things would have been easier for him. And it makes it, his death is what makes Harry kind of man up and, or woman up, whichever one you want to say. And like kind of take control and do things on his own. And it would have been easier and harder simultaneously with Dumbledore for those things to happen. Cause Harry wouldn't have been able to, like, he wouldn't have had that fire to do it, to get it done, I don't think, if he always had Dumbledore in his corner. So as I mentioned earlier, this death, I think, is the saddest for me. It's one of the only ones that I still cry at when I go back and reread the series. Through the movies, I cry a little bit more because just it's more emotional, I think, seeing things in, like, live action than it is in books a lot of times. But every time I read Dumbledore's death, I just cry. There was one time my freshman year of college, I decided to reread all of the books during the school year. I don't know why I thought that was a good idea. But I was sitting at a Brugger's Bagels finishing up the sixth book, and I was just crying, and it was, like, kind of embarrassing. But I feel like his death marks when, like, okay, like, war is here, it's happening, like, people need to start manning up, and that's what Harry does. And Dumbledore's death really intensifies everybody's feelings about the war, whether it's the bad side getting more confidence and kind of, like, we have victory in sight, or whether it's the good side, it's kind of like, we have something to fight for now. Like, we can fight for Dumbledore, and we can fight for the plan that he had and continue to execute it.
Yeah, I pretty much agree entirely. I vividly remember sobbing the first time I read Half-Blood Prince at the chapter when Dumbledore dies. I, like, know exactly where I was in my house. I remember my mom coming in being so confused, and I was just like, Dumbledore died. The rational part of me knows that Dumbledore's death is one of the least heartbreaking in this series, because he did get to live a full life and he was ready to face death, you know, like, he knew it was coming for a year in advance. But I still get really torn up about it every time, and I think this needed to happen to light the fire under Harry, as you said, to complete the task that Dumbledore started, because otherwise he would have relied on Dumbledore throughout the hunting for the Horcruxes, and it wouldn't have been Harry who defeated Voldemort. But once Dumbledore dies, Harry and the trio are full-on in go-go-go mode, and it kicks off the final countdown. Right from the end of year six, end of Half-Blood Prince, when Harry says, I'm not coming back to Hogwarts, you know, I mean, obviously you know, because there's only one book left in the series, but you know, like, this is it. Like, here we go. I feel like it legitimizes the war, because while they're still at Hogwarts, it doesn't really feel like war. Because they're in this kind of, they're protected by Dumbledore, right?
Nobody can touch them. Now they're in the end game. They're in the end game now.
Oh, God. Anyway, yeah. Dumbledore, he needed to die, and he was ready to die, but Still gets me, my old man.
I know. Okay, time for our pop quiz. So our question today is, out of kind of the three major deaths that we talked about, Cedric, Dumbledore, or Sirius, which death do you think affected Harry the most, or like was the most significant to Harry?
Yeah, I'm kind of interpreting this as most like important to Harry's arc and his trajectory, and I would argue Dumbledore's death is. Just because while Dumbledore is alive, Harry can rely on him to kind of guide the way, right? Dumbledore is the one that Voldemort fears, and Dumbledore knows more about Voldemort than anyone else. And once Dumbledore is dead, Harry really steps up. I think it's the first time that he takes charge. He becomes kind of a leader of this war, right? And I don't think the people in the Order really see him as a leader because they're still like, no, you need to be protected. Like, don't go off and hunt Horcruxes. They don't know he's hunting Horcruxes, but you know. But Dumbledore, with Dumbledore gone, Harry knows that he has to do this because he is the only one that knows this is the task to do. And I think if Dumbledore had survived, I mean, they probably might have got the job done a little bit faster, but Harry wouldn't, it wouldn't be Harry who saved the wizarding world. And I know it wasn't just Harry. I know that Ron and Hermione did so much to save the world and all of the people that fought in the Battle of Hogwarts, but without Dumbledore, it makes it Harry's fight.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I would agree with everything that you just said, but I think I'm interpreting the question a little bit differently. Like, I think I was interpreting it like which death was the hardest for Harry, and I for sure think it's Sirius. I think that he took that death the hardest of those, of the three. Like, as we talked about, when we talked about Sirius, his death is super hard for him to get over and was just a tragic death for Harry. He lost, like, I know we still have Lupin, but we lost that connection with his parents because Lupin fulfills it in some way, but not the same way that Sirius did. Like, Sirius was his godfather. He was his guardian. He Sirius is the one that Harry always turned to. Like, with questions during the Goblet of Fire and the task, he always looked to Sirius, and he loses that person in his corner. Like, I know he has other people, but to Harry, it was always Sirius. Sirius was the one in his corner, and he loses him. And I think that that scene, I talked about a little bit when we were talking about Sirius, when he's just desperately looking for ways around Sirius's death, like, no, he's back as a ghost, no, he's still in the mirror, blah, 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 this and this, is just so heartbreaking. And it shows that no matter how much death Harry has experienced in his life, this is kind of the first one that he fully goes through all of the steps of the grieving process, because one of them is, like, bargaining, and I don't think he ever really does that with other deaths, because, I mean, he sees Sirius dies, and obviously, he sees Cedric die, sorry, and so he kind of, like, accepts that pretty quickly, but with Sirius, he, like, literally goes through all of the processes. If he ever really gets to acceptance about it. I don't even know for sure if he gets there. But I think that's just the death he takes the hardest and is the most heartbreaking and affects him the most.
So this episode was just part one of our two-part death series. So if you tune in next week, we will have our next episode on death, which will focus on all of the deaths in Deathly Hallows. So that is a big one. Get ready. You can find that episode and other episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, pretty much anywhere you listen to your podcasts. For the summer, we're going to be releasing episodes every Tuesday. And before we wrap up this episode, we wanted to announce some exciting news that we have formed a podcast network called Kaleidoscope Media Network with two other podcasts. Here's Johnny, which is a horror podcast, and That's Not How Science Works, which looks at different films and TV shows, a lot of The Flash, and breaks down all of the incorrect science that we see. So those are two other popular culture podcasts, and we're joining forces with them.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to this opportunity to help grow our podcast, and by the time that this episode comes out, we'll have links to all of the network's social media, so I'll add those links in the episode description below. But you can find us on Facebook and Instagram as Wizard Studies Podcast, potentially Twitter at this point, who knows, And then if you have any suggestions for episode ideas, pop quiz questions, or if you know of any other podcasts that are kind of around our size, kind of smaller, kind of newer podcasts that would be interested in more information about the network, you could email us with that stuff at wizardstudiespodcast@gmail.com.
As always, thank you so much for listening. And remember, just do your best, we'll do the rest.
And learn until our brains all rot.